Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 1:33 p.m. It is Monday, February 6th. Before we begin, I want to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, and Summers Cole from the Juno LIO, who make sure we have sound and a transcript of our committee meetings. I also want to remind all committee members and everyone in the room to please silence your cell phones. Today we have President Representative Kopp, Representative Eastman, Representative Reinbold. Just a moment ago I saw Representative Christ Tompkins, but he seems to have disappeared. My Vice Chair, Representative Fansler, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to do business. Today we will be reviewing the appointment to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, and after that we'll have an opportunity to review House Bill 77, which is the revisers bill. It is my intent that we will pass the revisers bill out of committee today. I will recognize for the record that Representative Ledoux has joined us. And our first order of business today, the Speaker has referred the following appointment made by Chief Justice Craig Stowers to the Judiciary Committee, and that's the appointment of Joyce Anderson to the Select Committee on Ethics. The members should have already received the appointee's resume, application, as well as Chief Justice Stowers' letter of nomination. Joyce Anderson's on the line. And Ms. Anderson, can you hear us all right?
Yes, I can, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. So I'm going to open the hearing for public testimony. And Ms. Anderson, if you could go forward and state your name for the record and proceed with anything you'd like to tell the committee as we move forward.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Joyce Anderson, and I have put in my application for an appointment to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. I was the former administrator from 2001 to 2014. And I know that the Ethics Committee right now has some vacancies, so I considered putting my name in based on my experience on the committee and my knowledge that I have on the workings of the committee and so forth, and felt that it would be an asset both to the committee and to the legislature.
Thank you. Does anyone on the committee have any questions for Ms. Anderson? Ms. Anderson, I don't see anyone with questions. I will ask if there is anyone else in the room or online who would like to provide any public testimony with regard to the appointment of Joyce Anderson to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics? And I, hearing and seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing at this time. Are there any other questions from the committee with regard to Ms. Anderson? Are there any questions that the committee would like to discuss? I looked once and then I didn't see you. And actually, I will note that for the record that Representative Christ Tompkins has joined us. Representative Ledoux.
It's not really a question because I don't know whether questions is going to discussion is going to follow. But I just wanted to say that I've known Ms. Anderson since about 2005, and when she was the director of the Ethics Department, and I think she'd actually make a pretty good addition as a member of the Ethics Committee. I mean, her institutional knowledge would be phenomenal.
And that actually was the next topic I was going to say. Does anybody have a discussion? But I think it's totally appropriate. Representative Eastman, no questions for Ms. Anderson, but discussion. So unless you have a question for Ms. Anderson.
Well, I think I do, and part of it was I just didn't have much chance to look over her information before we got into the meeting here. But my question would just be.
So this is a question for the nominee.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Anderson, can you just tell us a little bit about how you see your role as a potential member of the Committee on Ethics?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I see my role a little different than that of the administrator or the executive director of the committee. I see it now as a member of the committee, which is the public members as well as the legislators on the committee, of which I know you are a member. I see that as looking at the material that's being presented, providing my take of the way, you know, whatever it is, whether it's a complaint, an advisory opinion, or whatever, and that would be based, as Representative Ledoux said, on my experience in the past with looking at statutes, interpreting them, and past decisions that have been issued by the committee. So I would strictly look at it as a member of the committee, and if the administrator had questions and so forth, the current one, Jerry Anderson, and wanted to ask me some questions, I certainly would be able to provide some background on that, which I have in the past when I was a consultant to the committee when he came on board.
Any follow-up? Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Yes, and I don't anticipate that this would ever be a situation, but if there were to be a vacancy in that administrator position, would your serving as a member of the committee limit you from ever being able to fill that role?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I believe it would, and I can tell you at this point that I would not want to go back as serving as administrator of the committee. I do not want to go back into a full-time job since I'm retired.
Thank you.
Any follow-up, Representative Eastman? Representative Ledoux.
So, Joyce, would you consider part of your role as a member of the committee if there are any rules that we've made that maybe don't necessarily make the most sense in the world to advise us from your perspective that maybe they don't make so much sense? I remember years and years ago after we had passed an ethics reform bill, I think it was 2006, and you were explaining to the legislature in 2007, you were leading the ethics course that we all have to take. And one of the legislators said, well, that's crazy. That doesn't make any sense. And you looked at this person and you said, don't blame me. You passed this law. So if you saw things like that, do you consider it might be part of your role as a member of the committee to tell us, because it's a whole bunch of new people now, that something might not make as much sense as maybe people had thought that it made back 10 years ago when it was the legislation was passed?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, I would. I know that I had, as administrator, come back to either the House Judiciary or the Senate Judiciary or State Affairs, which is what the ethics legislation goes through, you know, to let them know that this needed to be tweaked, this, you know, was unmanageable on an administrative level or enforcement level, or that it just didn't work. And also, under the duties of the committee, one of the duties of the Ethics Committee in Alaska Statute 2460 is to propose legislation. So, yes, I definitely would definitely get back to the appropriate people, like I said, either House Judiciary or State Affairs, or the leadership, and let them know that something needs to be changed. So, yes, I definitely would do that.
Thank you.
Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. I've worked with Joyce in various capacities over the last 8 years, and just found her to be a real professional, very easy to talk with, and very direct and forthright with advice, and very nonpartisan, and I'm glad she's willing to do this.
Any other questions or any other discussion? Seeing no other questions or discussion, do we have a motion with regard to Ms. Anderson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. In accordance with AS 2460-130, the Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the Chief Justice's appointee and recommends the appointee be forwarded to the House for ratification. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of ratification.
Is there any opposition to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, we will take a brief at ease to sign the confirmation committee report. We'll be at ease briefly. Record. And I believe Representative Eastman may have one more follow-up question for Ms. Anderson. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Through the chair, more of a comment than a question, but I wanted to say, Ms. Anderson, look forward to being able to avail ourselves on the committee of your experience and some of the recommendations you might have from that experience.
Our next order of business is House Bill 77, the 2017 Revisers Bill, brought to the introduced by the House Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council. This is the first hearing on the bill, and we have a presenter here. Hold on. Let me get to the right place. Come forward and tell us who you are. Ah. You're Lisa Kirsch.
Hi. My name is Lisa Kirsch. I am an assistant reviser with Legislative Legal, and I'm here to bring you the revisers bill. And the revisers bill is our opportunity to pick up and correct any deficiencies or any conflicts, any obsolete provisions in the statutes. For the most part, they are minor things. We try to avoid anything that would be a substantive change to the law, and it's generally cleanup provisions and things that need to be corrected to make the statutes consistent. So I can answer specific questions if anyone has a specific question about a specific section. I can go through section by section, but it is a rather lengthy bill.
I don't think you need to go through each section. Can you, I probably should have warned you this question was coming before you got here. Can you give us three to five highlights of sections that you think might be of more interest than others that give us a flavor of kind of the changes that are here?
I can group them kind of by category, I suppose. Okay. There's a fair number of sections that remove the words "but not limited to," because we have a statutory provision in Title I that allows us to remove that language because the word "including" doesn't need to be qualified but not limited to. There's a statute in Title I where we put a lot of the provisions that have general application to the statutes as a whole so that we wouldn't have to repeat that language everywhere. It just reduces that problem of having to repeat it over and over again.
So this is an instance where we're actually taking words out of the statute books?
We are unnecessary because we've got that provision in Title I. So there's a fair number of those. I have six sections that delete, repeal, or update obsolete provisions. There are 22 sections that deal with errors and oversights, things that we may have changed throughout the law, and then there's one spot we missed it. There are a couple of definitions that you'll see at the tail end of the sectional that are removed, not because they aren't good definitions, but because that word was removed from the chapter or the section that they were there for. So there's no longer a need for the definition because the term we're defining is no longer included. Okay. So that's the sort of oversight that we correct. And then there are 32 sections where we improve the form or substance of the law. A lot of times that'll be grammatical changes, preferred language. We're directed by legislative counsel to follow the drafting manual, so there are certain phrases that are preferred, certain grammatical structures that are preferred over others so that the statutes are consistent in their usage of language. So there are sections of that nature.
Okay. Representative Christ-Tompkins has a question, and I think we'll open it up to questions in general from the committee.
Perhaps more of a comment, Mr. Chair. I was going to say, I love the removal of tautologies. A tighter, more minimalistic statutes is something I appreciate, and I love the revisers bill every year and mostly want to offer my compliments because, gosh, this is the second time, really probably the first time I've ever publicly disclaimed this, but having spent hundreds if not thousands of hours doing similar they call it gnome-like work on Wikipedia, in which you attempt to bring things into conformance with the manual style. Similar to your revisions to the statutes, I have a lot of appreciation for this detail work, and as I was going through all the sectional analysis, I was just feeling a warm sense of joy washing over me.
Well, I have to say, you have a unique taste, and I share those tastes, but they are unique, I have to admit.
I'll just note that while Representative Christ, not Tompkins, may want to describe himself as gnome-like for not letting him spread that identity to anyone else. Representative Ledoux.
Thank you. Is there anything in this bill that if this bill... If this bill had not been introduced, that you could imagine would impact a legal case, whether it be civil or criminal, that somebody might be seeing jail time or not seeing jail time in disregard of the intent of the legislature, or would lose or gain any property rights if it were a civil case?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, that's a pretty broad question. I can't say with absolute certainty. I do know that we have not amended any criminal law provisions, at least nothing in Title 11 or Title 12. We generally amend, or not really amend, but we make these revisers bill provisions based on what title reviews we've done. We do periodic reviews of different titles of the statutes. So there are no changes to criminal law directly, but I'm not sure that there might not be a provision somewhere else in here that might affect a criminal law provision. But our goal is always to avoid changing substantive law. Now, having said that, if there is two provisions that don't match up and we've created something that makes it parallel, we may avoid a problem, which is in fact our goal. I mean, there might be something in here that was not changed, say, in a bill 1 year, like one of these definitions that was left in, and that a court might look at that and say, this creates an ambiguity. That could conceivably arise. I can't think of a particular section in this bill where that might happen, but I can envision something like that could conceivably happen. But that is our purpose in part, is to avoid conflicts between two provisions of law that might create an ambiguity or problem.
Thank you. I appreciate you telling me that. Just follow up. How many revisers are there?
There is one reviser through the chair.
Is that you?
Representative Ledoux. No, I am one of two assistant revisers. So there are two of us, and then there is Jerry Luckupt is the reviser. Jean Michelle is the other assistant reviser. So there are three of us in that capacity.
Representative
Ledoux.
And you work for Ledge Legal?
Yes.
And is this you're the primary thing that the reviser and the assistant revisers do, or are you involved in other things besides in Ledge Legal?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, there are quite a few other things that we do. All of the draft bills pass through the hands of one of the assistant revisers and also through the hands of the reviser.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And then, of course, the other big project that we just completed was the republication of the statutes.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. So I want to thank you for all the work that you and your colleagues have done on cleaning up the statutes. I'm certainly one for cleaning up the statutes whenever possible. And also that I haven't received very many concerns with all the various changes that have been made. Now, one reference was brought to my attention as a potential concern, and I wanted to ask you about the change reference at the very, very back of your letter to removing definitions, particularly the last definition, which is the change to Alaska Statutes 47.7900, dealing with the definition of nurse midwives. And certainly, the being from the Mat-Su Valley, there's quite a few midwives and nurse midwives in the Mat-Su, and there's sometimes a running battle between nurses and midwives as to you know, their respective roles and potential competition for each other. And so I'm wanting to know, as we are looking at removing the definition of nurse midwife, which doesn't appear any longer in this section of statutes, which is the nursing board, does that definition appear elsewhere in the statutes? Because certainly the midwives have their own boards and would clamor for equal recognition in statute, if not here, then somewhere else.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I can't pinpoint to you where this definition may appear elsewhere in the statute. I can get that information to you later. I don't have my ability to search the electronic database here. But the reason this definition is being removed is because the term nurse midwife is no longer used in that part of the law, I believe, for that chapter. So, you know, there's no reason to define it because it's not in there. Now, if there's another provision of law where this term appears, this definition wouldn't apply anyway because it's confined to one, you know, it's like at the lead-in of the section, you'll see in this chapter or in sections, you know, so-and-so to so-and-so, the term means the following. So if there is a need for that definition, you would have to do that through a piece of legislation.
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair, can you let me know if you have multiple chapters dealing with similar terms, would it the revisor's recommendation be to remove those definitions that are mentioned repeatedly throughout the statutes, or would it be the revisor's recommendation that those terms in every chapter that they're used should require a definition? Basically, is there an ability to reference definitions in another portion of the statute if the chapter you're looking at references a term and does not define it, or should that term be defined repeatedly in each chapter it appears?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that's a decision that's made on a case-by-case basis, but you can certainly have general definitions that apply to multiple places in the statutes. Often the way you'll see it done is it'll say this term, whatever that term is, say nurse midwife, has the meaning given in, and then it lists another statutory section. We also have, as I referred to in the beginning, Title I has a number of definitions, like a definition for municipality or a definition for person, terms that are used throughout the statutes. And it'll say, unless there's a specific definition that applies in a particular part of the statutes, this definition will apply throughout. So we do both of those things, and there are different reasons you might choose to do one or the other in different parts of the statutes.
Thank you.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, I've never had one of these bills before a committee that I have been on. So with the indulgence of the chair, I have one section that I just want a quick in regards to correcting errors, and then I have five where you say that it improves the form or substance of the law. Through the chair.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. So first of all, if you could start with Section 28 about revenue sharing versus assistance. This is under, you know, you just corrected an oversight. It's on page 14, Section 28.
All right. Yes. Through the chair, Representative Reinbold. Section 28 replaces revenue sharing with assistance, and that was a bill passed in the 29th legislature. It was SB 210, and it was made law in Chapter 44 of the session laws in 2016, so it was just this last session. And those terms were replaced that way throughout, and this is just one we missed.
In regards to that, was that the power cost equalization, which bill, I can't remember what Senate Bill 210 was.
You know, I don't.
You don't remember? Okay, that's okay.
Off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Okay, and then I'm going to move on to the five, if you don't mind.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. Sections number 14 of the bill. If you could just, these are the ones that you said that you're changing the substance or form of the law.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I'm not sure what the question is.
If you can explain how this is changing. You said you're changing the form or substance of the law in sections number 14. If you could just explain how this was changed.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, this is one of those that I referred to where we are removing but not limited to, which follows the word including, because there's a statutory provision in Title I that says that any time in the Alaska statutes that we use the word including, it is presumed to be followed by but not limited to. So that those words but not limited to are unnecessary. So those are, you know, being removed. Then the next change where we put based on instead of the basis of, that's just a grammatical change.
Okay,
it's just a language change. It's not meant to change the substance of the law or the meaning of it. It's just a different usage of words.
Okay, so just through the chair, this is based on discrimination in employment, and that's why this is a big issue, obviously, out in the public, and we don't know if the umbrella is bigger here or if it's just not limited to, so it sounds like it's a broader umbrella here. Is that correct?
The words but not limited to are presumed to remain there because of Title I. Nothing has been changed by removing them from this section.
Okay.
And because of the provision in Title I.
And why it's important is it's because you said it is going to change the form or substance of the law, and that's why there's five sections.
No, I'm sorry, I misspoke in that sense. It's not changing, it's not making a substantive change, what we consider a substantive change, which would actually change the effect of the law. All it's doing is changing the substance in the sense of the form of the language, to put it in a grammatical form and to remove those words, but not limited to, that are already included by virtue of the provision in Title I.
And through the chair, is that the same thing for the responsibilities of the commission? It's the same thing where you're eliminating but not limited to. Is there any other changes in Section 15?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, no, that's the single change in Section 15.
And just as a aside, Representative Reinbold, you'd asked the earlier question, what was Senate Bill 210 that was passed last year? The title is Community Revenue Sharing Program Changed to Community Assistance Program.
Excellent. Good work.
So I think that change you asked about earlier was simply because, in our infinite wisdom, the legislature chose to change the name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was excellent and quick response. I really appreciate it. I've only got three more, if you don't mind.
Go for it. Go ahead, Representative Reinbold.
So could you just briefly explain these in line 24, section 16, this is again page 9, functions and powers of the district judge or magistrate, are there any substantive changes in their duties or responsibilities?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, we're talking about page 9, line 30?
It's 25. Yeah, I see that change, but I'm just talking in section 16. And the only reason I'm bringing these to your attention is because it says that there is possibly, you know, an improvement or form of substance of the law. And so these are more serious issues for me. So I just wanted to see if there's any major change in section 16.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, no. The only change in that section is the addition of the word those and the deletion of the word such.
Excellent. Okay, so I guess what I'm wondering is why did you put these under the substance, you know, the substance of the law, if there's just one little word?
The reason that it's referred to in that way because it's changing the language. It's making a grammatical change. The word such is one that we avoid because it's being used in this case as a demonstrative adjective, and so we don't ordinarily do that. It's not it's something that was language that was traditionally used by lawyers, but is considered disfavored in this day and age. So it's just a language change to reflect common usage of modern English.
And Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. This is on page 12, line 26, section 23. This is an exemption based on religious convictions. Can you just go into this a little more detail?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, that is also a deletion of the words, but not limited to, which are unnecessary because of the provision in Title I that says including is presumed to include those words following it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other sections, Representative Reinbold? Any other questions for Ms. Kirsch?
Mr. Chairman, just a...
Representative Kopp.
Just a comment. The deletion of the term nurse midwife was a result of a law we passed last year in the legislative body. And I don't have that session law results behind me. I was looking. We don't have the 2016, but it looks like it was a bill we passed last year. This is just a conforming amendment now to that.
Right. Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Kirsch? I don't see any, and I don't believe we have anyone online or in the room who is interested in testifying on the revisor's bill. So I will close the public testimony at this time. Is there any further questions or discussions or any topic of interest relating to the revisor's bill from the committee? Representative Ledoux.
Well, I want to compliment Ms. Kirsch on all the work that has obviously gone into this. And I'm probably the only one in the committee who feels this way, but I'm just wondering. I know legislative legal works really, really, really hard, and I think they've lost people in the last couple of years. And so, I mean, there are times that you folks are working almost 24/7, it seems, and we really appreciate that. And I guess I wonder, really, in light of how overworked you really are, how necessary it really is to change things like, oh, let's say, I think we're looking at number 14. Looking at and page 9, section 14, line 14. Non-instructional duties based on, and that's put in, as opposed to on the basis of. You know, I guess I kind of look at that and I say, okay, 6-1. Half dozen to another. And I feel kind of the same way that, you know, if we'd left in, but not limited to, it's not really of any huge concern to me. I'd rather, you know, use the limited hours. I mean, because there is no such thing as more than 24 hours in the day. I mean, not overworking people with this kind of stuff. And again, this is just me, and I mean, it's done, and I appreciate, you know, the diligence, but I'm just wondering.
Go ahead, Ms. Kirsch. That is a question. It's kind of a combination of question and comment, so please let us know your thoughts.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, at the danger of becoming philosophical. I view my duty as a reviser as a duty to create the best possible law that I can. And I'm very proud of the body of law we have in Alaska. If you've ever tried to work your way through the federal statutes or the federal regulations, you'll appreciate what I'm saying. We have a very sensible, coherent body of law for the most part. There are certainly maybe exceptions. I'm not guaranteeing that it's all perfect. But I think given law that I've looked at from other states and other jurisdictions and federal law, I would say that what we have is a very good, coherent body of law that's consistent. Given the work that I do, given my propensity to be detail-oriented, like some of your members, I appreciate that, and it's very important to me. And things that may appear to be differences without any important distinction may, in fact, you know, legal cases turn on a single word sometimes. And so we try very, very hard to create a consistent body of law, a coherent body of law, a sensible body of law, and a body of law that the average person can read that is not caught up needlessly in legal terms or terms of art that make it more difficult for the average person to understand. So I do take, even though these seem like minor changes, I take them seriously. It is important to me as a reviser.
Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. In the work that you do in going through and looking at each of these statutes, do you or your colleagues ever discover any more problematic conflicts in the law?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that is in part the review that we do of the titles. Every year we review a certain group of the titles and come up with these changes. So that is, in fact, what we do during the interim. And, of course, if during session we discover difficulties or problems in the context of someone's bill, sometimes we will suggest, you know, while we're in this statutory section, would you like to include as part of your bill a change that improves this section or corrects a problem in this section? And then the body gets a chance to look at it and make sure that they agree. And you know, if it in fact passes, then those changes are made.
Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Ledoux's question, in doing the Title IV reform work, it's amazing how much the reviser catches how one statute changes so many other areas in the law, and you really get into that in the repealers, making sure that you've repealed things that are cross-connected intricately. And I just also wanted to thank the reviser of statute for the work you do in helping us catch things which seem to be the bigger projects we take on. The spider's web is enormous in the law, and you all have been very effective at catching those. Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair, to echo my colleague's comments, I also wanted to say that, yes, I think your testimony earlier about the differences between our state statutes and others is very accurate, and I appreciate very much that there is someone who is going through and doing that work, and it does give me peace of mind as an Alaskan that the major errors, hopefully, if any, will be caught. Thank you.
And I'll just make an observation as one who apparently has some gnome-like tendencies. That the use of but not limited to is a topic upon which I've had more discussions than I'd care to remember in drafting contracts about whether you need to say including but not limited to, and our tendency is often to add all these words into contracts, and people will say, why are you doing that in the contract? And there isn't really a good answer except that we are not always using words economically, and different words that show up, and like the changing from those such to those again, I've had more than one discussion on that very topic over the years, and so I actually very much appreciate the detail. I also appreciate that I know we give you the largest dose of work when we're in session, and I appreciate that a lot of this revisor's work goes on when we're out of session so that we're not having you burning the midnight oil looking for not limited to on at 12 o'clock on a Sunday night when we're busy with other things. I also appreciate the perspective that Representative Ledoux has that maybe sometimes this can be pretty time consuming. But appreciate all that, and I don't see any other.
I'll take one.
Representative Fansler, I always try to go last, and you.
Sorry. I got out of line there.
No.
Through the chair, Mr. Chair. And just to weigh in, as everybody else is very appreciative of all the hard work you guys do, and to tend towards Representative Ledoux's comments, hopefully as technology advances continue to increase, you know, searchable files and things like that, hopefully we'll cut down on some of these kinds of situations, and you know, very much do not wish to burn our employees out with this kind of work that probably we as legislators should perhaps be putting in on the front end to consider all the ramifications when we are looking at our possible legislation. So thank you.
And I will note, to the extent anyone here wants to borrow it at some point, I have a copy of the Uniform Law Commission's recommendations and manual on how to write clear and concise legislation. So to the extent anyone wants to borrow that to review, please let me know. I don't see any other comments, and so and no other comments. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 77, version 30-LS00100O, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal notes.
Hearing and seeing no objections, House Bill 77 moves from the committee. We will adjourn for the day. Please stay after the meeting to sign the committee report. And also a reminder to committee members that we will be hearing House Bill 8, Enforcement of Foreign Protective Orders, on Wednesday. We will not be meeting on Friday, and we will stand adjourned today on Monday at 2:17 p.m.